Welcome to This is Type 1, real-life type 1 diabetes with your hosts, Colleen and Jesse. I'm Colleen Mitchell, and I've had type 1 diabetes for 23 years. By day, I'm a process analyst in the power industry, and by night, I'm an author, blogger, and virtual assistant. I'm passionate about type 1 diabetes education and showing others that this disease doesn't define me.
I'm Jesse Tuggy, and I've had type 1 for 7 years. I love hiking and painting, and I'm looking forward to working as an engineer after college. My diagnosis has inspired me to take control of my future and learn everything I can about it.
Each week on the show, we'll talk about real life with type 1 diabetes, bring on cool people with connections to type 1, and above all, encourage you to understand that this disease doesn't have to hold you back. This isn't medical advice. This is life with type 1. Welcome to episode 8 of This is Type 1, real life type 1 diabetes with your hosts, Colleen and Jesse. So today we're talking with Jesse's mom, Denise, about her experience parenting a type 1 diabetic. But before we dive in, it's time for our win, fail, and hack of the week. And Jesse, you are up with the win.
So for the win of the week, I went to a football game this last Friday night. Unfortunately, our team lost, but that's okay because we're not very good anyways. So when I got back from the game, I realized that I had a low reservoir. It was really late, so I was really tired. So at the last minute, I was just like, okay, I'll just change it out, rather not dealing with the highs later on and the consequences. So I just felt really proud of myself for staying up that extra 15 minutes instead of going to bed to not have to deal with high blood sugars later.
I'm proud of you for that, because I should have done that like the last time I had to change my set, and I went to bed and ended up having highs all night.
You see, I tend to do this a lot where I just forget about it for a while, and then I have highs, and I'm just trying to change that. So,
well, my pump, it's like the last day of the site, it ends up being way less effective. And so at like 30 units or something, it's like you got to change it or else you're going to be high all night or all day, which is really annoying.
I bet.
Okay, I am up with the fail, and it's kind of a mix of a fail and a win, but I'm going to still call it a fail. So last week I had planned to go hiking before we went to a wedding, but the timing ended up kind of being pretty bad because I restarted my sensor that morning, but it wasn't accurate when it kicked into the sensor period. So I didn't feel comfortable going on a 2-hour hike. And on top of that, I changed my set that morning. So if I had had a combo platter of the restart plus a failed site, I would have been like in a world of hurt if I'd been in the middle of a hike and all of that happening. So it was kind of a fail at planning, but kind of a win at making the right decision to not go hiking, even though I wanted to.
And then also considering you have the wedding too.
Yeah. So we still had to like get ready for that.
Right.
So moving on to our hack, and I have the hack this week. And my hack this week is to clean your dang finger before checking your blood sugar. So every year at Panther Camp, I see campers poking their fingers without cleaning them, like at all. And then they look pretty surprised when the meter shows a high blood sugar for pretty much no reason other than the fact that they didn't wash off the tater tot recipe from lunch. So you should always try to wash your hands before testing or use an alcohol swab or some Purell. I have a little tube of Purell in my checker kit. So that's what I like dab my finger on before I have to check. But if nothing else is available, just wipe away the first blood drop with a tissue and then test the second drop because that'll get rid of most of the residue.
Yeah, I don't do that.
So that's a hack that you should start using.
That is a hack I really should start using. And since we have our special guest here sitting next to me, she's nodding her head and agreeing with me.
Yeah, this is Jesse's mom, Denise. I was actually pointing at her as she should own up to not doing that.
Great. Okay. So, Jesse, do you want to introduce your mom?
All right. Yeah, I can. So, since this is the 8th episode, we usually have a guest for every 4 episodes, and this week is my mom.
Hi, everyone. This is Denise Tuggy. I am so honored to be able to join you on this podcast. I am just amazed at you young ladies being able to do such a great thing and share your experiences and help other people. I think it's absolutely just the best thing. So thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for volunteering. More like forced volunteering, but I'm
still happy to be here.
All right. So do you want to just dive right in with some questions for you?
That sounds good.
All right. How long has diabetes been in your life for?
Well, type 2 diabetes has been in my life my entire life because my grandmother had type 2 diabetes. Type 1 came into my life when you, Jesse, got type 1 diabetes. So what's it been, like 8 years now?
8 years on the 27th of September.
Your diversary. So yes, 8 years.
So can you tell us the story behind how you found out about her diabetes?
Yes, it was absolutely terrifying. She had been going to the bathroom a lot, having to pee a lot, drinking a lot, was more grouchy than normal, kind of lethargic, but all these symptoms seemed like she was just having growth spurts, or she had was getting a cold, or she was tired. I mean, there was no indication that she was having ketoacidosis going into type 1 diabetes. And my ex-husband and I had no education around type 1 diabetes. So the final thing, her diagnosis was one day she ended up staying home at school and she was on the couch and she was literally looked like she had lost 10 pounds overnight. It was completely terrifying. And so we ended up taking her down to the doctor. The doctor immediately took her down to the emergency room. And it was connected, so that was convenient. And then from there, as soon as they got her a little bit stable, they immediately took her down to Mary Bridge, the hospital, an ICU. So that's what happened, the story. And we had no idea what was going on. So it was pretty nerve-wracking.
So you had no idea that those were the symptoms of diabetes?
No, and I really, really wish that doctors would tell parents the top 5 symptoms. I had talked to our pediatrician about it. I don't know why they don't, but it's just this, all the symptoms seem like it's a common symptom of something else. Like I said, you've got a cold or the flu or they're tired or growth spurt, and not knowing and having potentially being close to, you know, death. I just really wish that pediatricians would direct people to learning about the top 5. It would prevent, I think, some people having to rush to the hospital or be more educated.
Yeah.
So what was your first thought when you found out that I had diabetes?
I don't recall my first thought. I just was so confused and overwhelmed. One day we were getting ready for school. The next thing I knew, we were in the hospital trying to organize your brother, getting him care, you know, have someone take care of him while we were in the hospital. And so I was just kind of deer in the headlights. So I don't really remember my first thought. I just know I was very scared and bewildered and overwhelmed, and very thankful for the diabetic educators that came to the hospital, because they just held my hand and talked to us and supported us, and the doctors were amazing, and just so, so thankful for them.
Yeah, the team at Mary Bridge is fantastic.
Yeah, and we ended up staying at the treehouse down there. They have support, a place to stay for families that have kids in the hospital.
Very nice.
So that was just a lifesaver.
So what are some bright spots from raising Jessie with diabetes? Like, what good things have happened?
So many good things. She's an amazing young lady. She's had to grow up fast, I'm sure, as you have. You have this weight on your shoulder that nobody can even imagine unless they are type 1 or live with a type 1. You're keeping yourself alive on a daily basis. And she's mature, she's responsible, she's independent. She's made some amazing friends, and you being one of them.
Aww.
I couldn't be more proud of her and the way she takes care of herself, and I think that'll just serve her well going forward the rest of her life.
Awesome. What about bright spots for her care? Like, did you find out specific ways of doing things that helped her blood sugar stay more stable?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of little tricks that you learn along the way. I think one of the main things that we've tried to drill and practice with her is have all your supplies with you all the time. You never know when something's going to happen.
That's been a fail.
Yes, and it's just
I've talked about this before.
But the way we approach it is, I've always said every time that something goes wrong is just another reminder of how to get prepared for the next time. So nobody's perfect, and we don't expect anyone to be perfect. But it's even like we went on vacation. I took the kids to the beach for New Year's Eve, and we didn't have, at the time, we needed a AAA battery, Well, it was literally midnight and her battery died and we had to go down to the lobby and everyone was at parties and nowhere to be found because it was literally midnight. And luckily someone showed up at the hotel that found one, but I was probably about 5 minutes away from calling 911. So just even having a battery with you, those are the things that we've tried to really practice and ensure having a checklist. And I always ask her before she leaves the house, do you have all your supplies?
So when I was a kid, my mom had like a little supply backpack that we always brought with us. And actually still have the backpack. It's just a little tiny thing.
Yeah, we got a kit from the hospital and we carried that around. It was a pink camo, looked like a lunch box. And we carried that around for years. And then now she's graduated to cute backpacks.
So do you remember any like landmines that we had? Like,
so kind of like, what did you stumble into and realize it really badly affected her blood sugars?
There was one time shortly after she got diagnosed and was at home and she had a low and she was playing on the floor in the family room and all of a sudden she was just giggling and laughing and her dad and I were just like, what is going on? And, you know, we were new to it, so we weren't sure. We were just learning how to manage it. But that is kind of a funny story because we're like, oh my God, she's acting like she's drunk. And we're like, well, at least she's a happy drunk. So I don't remember why she went so low, but just watching her personality change has been kind of fascinating when she's really high or really low.
Fun fact, when my blood sugar is low, everything is either 10 times funnier or makes me 10 times more mad. And it's kind of a 50-50 chance.
Yeah.
That's generally what's happened.
Yeah. You never know what you're going to get. It's always an adventure with a type 1 diabetic.
That is the truth. So when I'm talking about landmines, I'm talking about things like stress makes my blood sugar go up. Carbs make my blood sugar go up. If I forget to bolus, that's a landmine. So things like that.
So as far as landmines go, if she does forget to bolus, I think all the things you just mentioned. Okay, so landmines for her and probably every type 1 diabetic, emotions, negative or positive, anything out of the ordinary can be a landmine / trigger for something that high or low. Your period, which happens monthly. So that's just, I mean, all these things are life, everyday life occurrences. So the life of a type 1 diabetic is a roller coaster and that's out of their control. And I think the key is to learn how to be calm and be patient with yourself and follow the steps that you have to do to do self-care. Some other ones, I think tired and stress are huge. Any change in the home environment, such as a parent getting divorced, someone moving out of the home, any of those big life changes, a parent getting a different job or getting laid off, creates all these emotions, and all the emotions have an impact on the way your blood sugar works. So I've seen all these things and so many factors, like you mentioned, carbs and fats and even just fruits and vegetables, everything. I think almost everything in your life can be a landmine or a trigger to having highs and lows depending on where your body is at any point in time.
Yeah. So there's a book actually called Bright Spots and Landmines, and it's by a guy called Adam Brown. He's the, I think, senior editor of Diatribe. And on Diatribe, they actually have a graphic of like the 42 different things that affect blood sugar. So we'll link to that in the show notes because it's pretty interesting.
Sounds interesting. Never heard of that.
And the book itself is free if you get the PDF version. So, well, I think we already have a link to that on the podcast page, but I read it in less than a day and it was amazing.
It sounds really interesting.
So what was the most confusing thing you had to deal with besides, you know, the confusion coming from, oh my gosh, my daughter has been diagnosed with type 1 diabetes.
So like after diagnosis, like maybe six months.
I think it was confusing. It's very confusing to other people. So she was in elementary school when she got diagnosed. So to explain it to her nurses, her teachers, the principal, the severity of it, it's very, very confusing to other people. And I think that's a huge challenge, is trying to communicate that out. We have approached it as, Jessie is not type 1 diabetes. She happens to have type 1 diabetes. When she first got it, we had an assembly for third class at the elementary school. She got up, she spoke about it. Her dad and I spoke about it. We showed the kids the pump. We asked them to please contact a nurse, teacher, or the yard person in charge of the playground if they saw her sitting down or having a problem. So I think it's one of the biggest challenges is just communicating out to other people with compassion and not overwhelming people.
Okay.
So what's been the biggest lesson you've learned from watching me grow up with diabetes and helping me with learning it?
Well, I don't know the biggest lesson, but one lesson I've learned for myself is to have patience and understanding and compassion. And it's made me slow down. When you have any issues that we need to address, everything else in the world stops. And I think it's a challenge. It just is. It's just the life of a type one. It's the mom, being a mom of a type one. I bought a t-shirt recently that said duck diabetes. And if you, you can infer what you want from that, but it does affect the whole family. And I think also being cognizant of how it affects her sibling and having to deal with those emotions and just taking a break when I get overloaded too, and making sure I have energy reserves to take care of Jess when she needs it. And then, you know, if she can't manage it herself one day, we've always had an agreement that if she asks me to do anything with her diabetes and lift it off her shoulders for one day, that I would do that.
That's amazing. Nice.
Yeah, even just making a snack, changing out her Mio, anything. Amazingly enough, I think she's only asked for that help 5 times in, you know, less than 10 in 8 years. So I'm pretty proud of this girl.
Nice. I think my mom changed my set for, years until I finally worked up the courage to do it myself.
Yeah, I have to say that we helped her for, I don't know, quite a few years.
I think it was like 2 or so.
Well, I remember standing in the family room and we would hold her hand. And sometimes she'd cry. I forget those things now because she's so independent. But yes, it was not easy.
Not
very beginning. Much not easy. Yeah. But you're doing amazing. I guess I've forgotten a lot about that stuff.
I know. I did too. It's like bringing it all back. I'm like, well, crap, I wasn't this independent.
So kind of a different tack. What still baffles you about type 1? Like, what just doesn't make sense even now after 8 years exposed to it?
That's a really good question. I think... What baffles me? I think the pressure of a type 1 diabetic's life is so intense that only a type 1 can understand it. Going every 3 months to get your A1C checked is a big deal, and it's a lot of pressure for a type 1 because it's just a test every time. It's pretty intense. So I don't know if baffles the right word, but I just get concerned that there's so much stress trying to get your body to work properly. It's just such a heavy weight.
Yeah, I definitely went through that with college.
Yeah, well, we're heading there, so a few more years.
Well, she'll have a whole group of people to ask for advice, not just like random doctors.
Well, that's awesome. I think we'll need that support group.
So how has diabetes most affected your life?
Well, it's almost like being an EMT, first responder, I feel like sometimes, because when Jessie needs something, my world stops and I need to address what she needs. So, for example, when I'm at work, I have my cell phone with me always. I feel like I never can be without that. So if I get a text from her, usually I can't take calls because I'm in meetings a lot. But if I get a text from her, whatever I'm doing, I immediately check it. On the off chance there's something severely wrong. So I think the way it's affected my life is I have to be there for her no matter what. So I tell my supervisor that she's type 1 and I have to check my texts during meetings. If I might have to step out, it rarely happens, but on that off chance that her pump breaks or she's having an issue, I have to stop everything I'm doing to help her. And I don't mind doing that. And I love her so much. However, sometimes it'd be nice to put it down. just like you guys, I'm sure would love to be able to put down type one.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yep.
Agreed.
Yeah.
It would be nice to take a break, but we don't get that.
No.
Ever.
No. Yeah. And thank God there's, you know, the medicine and the technology and all this, because it's come so far. And if you gals were type 1, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, it'd be a whole nother level of managing and a lot more stressful even than what you have now.
We'd oh,
have
yeah.
pee on sticks.
Yeah.
And guess what our blood sugar is 20 minutes later.
Yeah, it'd be so much harder. Nobody wants to do that.
Not to mention the fact that you would have to sharpen the needles.
Ooh.
You'd have to boil the needles to sterilize them and then sharpen to get the barbs off because you reused them. They didn't have the reusable ones back then.
That's not fun.
No.
So did you have a good support system when I was diagnosed? Like with the nurses and
yes, I have family. To say shout out to the Marybridge nurses. They were there for us every time we called, anytime we had a question. Our doctor is amazing. Thank you, Dr. Thompson. I do feel like we had a lot of support. I personally never joined a support group. I just didn't have time for that, being a working parent and two small kids, taking care of a house and being married. I just didn't have time. But I think we were very fortunate that the medical environment that we were fortunate enough to get hooked up with supported us a lot, and it made a huge difference.
What about a support system now?
So I personally do not have a support system. Again, same kind of situation. My time is very limited. I recently met a gal 2 years ago, Dr. Beth Braun. She is a type 1 teenage psychiatrist, so she counsels. But she was up to last weekend and stayed, and we got to visit. And that was extremely helpful, just chatting with her, because she actually understood what I was talking about and not having to explain every little thing. It would be great to have a type 1 mom buddy. But again, people's resources and time is limited. So I think it's a challenge. But if people do have that time, I think it's a super great asset to be able to join a support group.
There I can connect you to my mom.
Oh, yes. Moms are great.
There should be a Panther camp for moms and parents.
Yeah, oh, but then who would take care of you while we're all at camp?
We'll have our own
See,
camp.
This is the way my mind works. Well, who's going to be there for you if I'm gone?
Do you trust me to manage my diabetes when I leave for college?
I do trust you to manage it. I am more worried about other people influencing you than I am trusting you. It's just the same for me as driving. It's not you driving that I'm worried about. It's the other people on the road. So I think finding your support group in college and your friends that are going to understand your needs is going to be huge. And I do trust you.
I'm very happy you do.
Yes.
So a great college resource is the College Diabetes Network.
Oh, I have never heard of that. And we should also put those in the show notes, too.
I think they already are.
Either.
Are they really? I can't look at these show notes. I don't know what's on there.
It's okay. They're somewhere.
So, they are. What is something that you wish that I had done differently when I was diagnosed?
Oh, nothing. There's absolutely nothing. You were so young. And we were also lost and scared. I don't think there's anything you could have done differently. I'm getting choked up, but I do remember when you were taken to the hospital in an ambulance and I was sitting with you and you didn't cry at all. They give you a stuffed animal and you just sat there and you didn't cry when you got diagnosed. You didn't cry in the ambulance. You didn't cry in the hospital. It just kind of blew my mind. And about a month after you got home, you had a major meltdown after school one day. So there's nothing I would have said do differently. But I think going forward, if you have emotion around anything, you need to let it out. And I think it's healthier to express your emotion than try and keep it bottled up. But at that age, there was no way that you were controlling any of that. So I think you were amazing.
I can't
make me cry now.
Aww. So I can attest to the cathartic feeling of screaming into a pillow. That always helps.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, I've done that before. What would you like to know more about diabetes?
Well, I think the resources that you mentioned sound amazing, especially the College Network, Diabetic College Network resource. That would probably give me a better sense of comfort. I think, you know, you leaving home, I would like to know about how it's going to be managed and what your plan is to do when something goes wrong. And if you happen to be out of state or somewhere far, we need to just put a plan in place if something happens. So that's what I'd like to know more about.
What my plan is.
Yes. What your plan is.
So I need to come up with the plan.
Yes, but you have a couple of years, so don't worry about that right now.
And I can help you with that.
Thank you. We'll need help.
So what advice do you have for parents of newly diagnosed type 1 diabetics, knowing what you know now?
I think my number one main piece of advice is reach out to the type 1 or the diabetic educators. Do not be embarrassed. Call them every day if you need to. Call them 10 times a day if you need to. If you have questions, concerns, reach out. There's nothing more worrisome than being isolated and not getting answers and not knowing if you're doing the right thing. So I would definitely, definitely reach out. The other very important piece of advice, if you have more than one child in your family, please make sure to give the second child, the non-type 1, as much attention as you can, because they end up feeling very attention deprived and it's confusing, especially if the kids are young. We tried to do our best to manage everything, but it's such a big switch from giving even attention to, we have two children, to giving 75 to 90% of the needed attention medically to one child, and then the other person overnight gets the leftovers. So it's so difficult, but if you can, make the non-diabetic child feel special, important, loved, not ignored. I don't think we could have done anything better in our situation, but those are two really important pieces of advice that I would give.
So we talked to my sister in episode 4 about that, and she gave pretty much the exact same advice that you're giving now, is to not neglect the other kid.
Yeah, and I don't think any of it's intentional. I know for us it wasn't, and I tried. My mom came and stayed with us at the treehouse, and I stayed with Charlie at the treehouse and went back and forth. Her dad stayed with her in the hospital, and then we took turns, and no matter how much attention you give them, it's just such a confusing time. You just have to do the best you can. And then I think going forward after things calm down is keep giving that non-diabetic child extra attention as much as you can. They don't understand, and they need it just as much as the diabetic child does.
Awesome. Okay. So if listeners want to connect with you, where would be the best place to find you?
So I am on Instagram. My Instagram name is Denise in Aub.
So if you want to find my mom on Instagram to reach out as a parent for support or find that diabetic buddy that you need, my mom is at Instagram. Her name is DeniseInAub, and all of that is lowercase.
Yeah, Denise and Aub. So I'm here. If you would like to reach out, I am more than happy to chat and help in any way I can.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thank you. This was really interesting and eye-opening, and I always learn something new talking to people about type 1 diabetics. I learned something about myself. I learned something about Jesse, and it's been really fun getting to know you better, Colleen.
Oh, thank you. It's been great knowing you.
Yeah.
All right. So a reminder to our audience, if you have questions about type 1 diabetes, please leave us a comment or email at Colleen@inspiredforward.com. We will be answering listeners' questions in the future episodes.
And now it is time for diabetes in the news. So this week we're talking about how the FDA approved nasal glucagon. And this is from an article from Diatribe, which we'll link to in the show notes. So for those diabetics and relatives of diabetics who have ever had to administer or even think of administering glucagon during a severe low or a seizure, this announcement is kind of a big relief. So this is straight from Diatribe. The FDA has approved Baqsimi, a nasally administered glucagon for the treatment of severe hypoglycemia in people with diabetes 4 years or older, Baqsimi is administered like a nasal spray and comes in a single-use dispenser that requires just 3 steps to use. You remove it from the tube, insert the tip of the device into one nostril, and then push the plunger all the way in to administer the dose. Notably, this does not require inhalation, meaning that it can be successfully administered by another person if the receiver is unconscious. So Baqsimi is the first FDA-approved glucagon of its kind. It's needle-free and comes ready to use, so there's no mixing or preparation. And this is a radical improvement over current glucagon kits, which are really difficult to use in an emergency and often require training. So a caregiver must successfully mix a powder and a liquid and then inject the person experiencing severe hypoglycemia. But with Baqsimi, it's super easy to use. So in a small study, the difference in user experience was astronomical. Comparing nasal glucagon to the cumbersome injection kit, 7 times as many caregivers correctly gave a full dose of intranasal glucagon. 94% of caregivers correctly gave a full dose of glucagon with the intranasal device. And conversely, only 13% of the same caregivers delivered a full dose with the actual injectable glucagon. It took caregivers 7 times less time to administer the intranasal glucagon than current glucagon injection kits. It takes about 16 seconds for the intranasal glucagon versus 1 minute and 53 seconds for the injection kit. So innovations like this are what keep the diabetic community moving forward. I don't remember the last time I even had a vial of glucagon, let alone the last time it was used on me. And that was probably in 2002 with my seizures. It's just not something that's worth the regular prescription cost when it expires and I never use it. So I hope Baqsimi is more cost effective, even though it has a similar shelf life to the injectable glucagon made by Eli Lilly.
And then disclaimer, if you ever use a glucagon, please immediately go to the hospital or call 911 after usage.
Exactly.
So we have our question for the audience this week. Our question for diabetics is, what do you wish your parents knew when you were first diagnosed?
And as for the parents, what do you wish you'd known about diabetes before your child was diagnosed? Do you want to answer the first part?
Sure. So I wish my parents had known what diabetes was and that there was a difference between older people with type 2 and then the fact that children can get type 1.
And I can answer the parents' question. It's pretty much an echo of what Jesse just said. I wish I had known what type 1 was and the symptoms, and that would have been really helpful.
Super helpful. Oh, yeah. So great.
So for me, I wish my parents had known more about how to actually feed me as a child. I grew up not knowing that I could have saved myself a lot of frustration with both my diabetes and my weight if I'd known that what I eat really matters.
Yeah, that's super important. I think Jessica was fortunate enough to have parents that were, I had taken nutrition classes in college and was always very conscientious of the kind of food we ate. But yeah, food is huge.
And that is it for this episode of This is Type 1. Thank you so much to Denise for coming on as our guest. And remember, you can find her on Instagram at DeniseInAub. And you can find the show notes at inspiredforward.com/episode8. That's the number 8. And if you have an idea for an upcoming episode, please leave us a comment or send an email. And you can also get straight to our podcast page by going to thisistype1.com with the number 1. If you would like to show your support in a different way, we have a Patreon. And we're still working on the perks and bonuses, but if you'd like to join us, the link is patreon.com/thisistype1. And we'll link to it in the show notes. Our music is by Joseph McDade, and our audio wizard is my husband, Tim. I'm on all social media as @inspiredforward, and our email is colleen@inspiredforward.com.
And I'm on Instagram as @JJ_CrystalKAT. Please feel free to send me questions or comments you have about type 1 diabetes or the show.
Thank you so much for listening. If you like this episode, please share it with your friends, and please leave us a rating or a review on iTunes, since that helps other people find us. And be sure to listen next week when we talk about why the food we eat as diabetics matters more than our doctors and dietitians want us to think. Remember, you control your diabetes, it doesn't control you. Hey, if you like what you're listening to on this podcast, you have to join us in the Half Dead Pancreas Club. It's my private community where you'll connect face to face with other people with type 1 diabetes, get personalized emotional support, and learn how to handle anything T1D throws at you.
Join us over at inspiredforward.com/community. I can't wait to see you there.